We kick off hour number two. This segment brought to you by Lloyd's Electric Service. Check them out online at LloydsElectricService.com. Electrical generators. They got those Generac generators for standby backup power. It's Lloyd's Electric Service, 865-692-6700. That's 865-692-6700. Or online at LloydsElectricService.com. Talked a lot of Tennessee, Mississippi State, hour one. What we'll do is open up the phone lines. If you want to give us a call and tell us how you think the game will go, you can do that on the Next Door Home Group hotline, 865-546-8200 is that number. But we are going to move along and kind of hit the other big games across college football in hour two and then just bounce back and forth to Tennessee as we go. And then we'll hit some NFL and NBA China in hour three.
Just real quick, as far as against the spread for Tennessee this year, Nate, you and I are 3-2. Billy's 2-3, and Houston is 1-4.
There you go. That's really not that bad when you consider, well, I guess a good pick against Georgia State would have at least said Georgia State would cover.
Yeah.
You know, so there is that. But I don't know. Not going to apologize for thinking Tennessee was going to come out and play well to start the season. That's pretty tough. And what spread are we going with for Tennessee today, Davey? What are we locked in?
Locked in yesterday at Mississippi State by 7.
Tough number. I like the 6.5.
Might be smart to just push.
Better.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton.
Mississippi State, a 7-point favorite. I mean, that means Vegas thinks that Mississippi State is about 9 or 10 points better than Tennessee. How does that make you feel?
I mean, I can't deny it, man. Yeah. I'm working with what I've seen. And are they lying? Are they?
No. Well, and two, that, you know, they're not predicting what's going to happen. They're trying to rate the teams in a way that people bet equally on both. So, you know, that's a little different. Mississippi State hasn't been easy to figure out either, though. Like, they got blasted by Auburn. They handle Kentucky pretty well. I drew them in SEC Survivor week one. So I was watching them play Louisiana Lafayette, and I was sweating for a little bit because it was, like, tied in the second quarter. And they still only won that game by, I think, a couple touchdowns. Of course, now Louisiana Lafayette has had a pretty good Sun Belt schedule for a while. It's like so they're about as good as, like, you know, the App State team that rolled in here and gave Tennessee fits on that Thursday night a few years ago. So maybe that's not that big of a deal. But Mississippi State's not the easiest team to understand either. And, of course, Tennessee's just been a complete yo-yo.
And these suspensions aren't going to help either that are, you know, activated, of course, conveniently for tomorrow's game.
Yeah, that'll be a big story. We'll look for who's in, who's out for Mississippi State. It looks like it's going to be all hands on deck. So that'll, I don't know, that'll be interesting. Give us a shout if you want, 865-546-8200. If you want to weigh in on the football game, you feeling nervous or excited? I mean, I'm pumped. That last week felt like going to a funeral. Like, you knew the outcome.
All week. Yeah. It was just like, you know, ripping off the Band-Aid one day at a time. That's what it was.
Yeah, and then you had some stuff that went pretty well, which was at least exciting to talk about after. But I've been really looking forward to this game because I'm excited to see how the team – I guess what gives me the most optimism, if you want to talk about hope for a minute, is that Tennessee hadn't quit against Georgia. Tennessee's players still came out with that same fire and intensity that I think it would take to win these types of games, even against Georgia on a week where it felt like you had no chance to win, and you probably didn't have a chance to win, but they still played with the effort and intensity that we needed in other games earlier this season. So it gives me hope that if they'll come out and play that way, that they will be in the football game, that it will be close, and that you'll have a chance to win late.
I mean, it was the first time that they actually played, like you said, with some type of intensity. Like, if that effort was at Georgia State, I mean, we're not having this conversation right now about being the laughingstock of the nation, you know?
That's true. Other noon kickoffs tomorrow, South Carolina at Georgia between the hedges. Obviously, that one probably going to be a pretty easy game for Georgia. Houston drew the Bulldogs in SEC Survivor. So if this game's close at all in the second half, I'll be a big Gamecock fan in that one, but I just don't see Georgia just looks like too much of a complete team, and South Carolina, as this has not been one of their cycle up years. They've got a few decent players, but Jake Bentley going down early, he wasn't playing that well anyway. Yeah. So they're starting a true freshman. Georgia's just so good along the lines of scrimmage that even when their skill guys aren't quite clicking, it doesn't seem to matter. You said yesterday you don't think Jake Fromm's that good a quarterback.
I do not.
What's your reasoning? What's your scouting report on Jake Fromm?
For me, Jake Fromm is excellent at short and intermediate throws. That's awesome. You know, he hits running backs in stride, and they do what I call the dirty work. Yak, yards after catch. But in the NFL, and he has added, I will say, I was watching some film on it yesterday, because after I said that take, I was like, let me go so I know what I'm talking about. He's added mobility to his game, rolling outside the pocket, making throws on the run. But to me personally, I do not think Jake Fromm is a top three quarterback in this upcoming draft, if he were to come out. If he were to come out. I would take Eason, Herbert, and Tua, not in that order. Probably reverse that order. But.
Yeah. Okay. It's an interesting argument because it's the same one you can apply to Alabama running backs, to, you know, lots of quarterbacks, because he's got one of the best offensive lines in the country.
Yeah. I mean, he can eat a sandwich and a bag of chips back there.
I guess I rate him higher because when he has gotten those opportunities against an Alabama defense, he's been a guy that still pulls the trigger and gets the ball to his playmakers. And I don't know how much of that he's done down the field. Might have to watch some more, and obviously we'll get the rest of this year to kind of see where he's at in his stage of development. It's going to be interesting, and as we'll kind of go towards the NFL draft, you've got other guys in the SEC too who, like Joe Burrow's kind of come out of nowhere as a NFL guy too. I mean, he seemed like kind of a game manager last couple years in a pretty conservative LSU offense. This year, they're turning it loose. They showed they were previewing Texas and Oklahoma, another noon kickoff tomorrow, and they showed Joe Burrow in that play, the back-breaking play against in the LSU-Texas game, where Texas blitzed. His running back picked up the blitz for a second. There was another guy kind of coming free who got caught up in the traffic a little bit, and Burrow basically had to step up in the pocket and then just really throw it out into just the hole in the zone and hope his guy got there as he, you know, took a shot and went down in the pocket. And I mean, it was the type of play that a really confident quarterback makes, where you know it's all or nothing. Like, I'm going to step up, I'm going to get killed right here, and I've got to throw this ball somewhere where if my guy doesn't get there, it's just incomplete. And it was perfect. Guy ran to it, and it was all man-to-man coverage for Texas. So once he caught it, he was gone. Touchdown. We'll see. Of course, LSU, the other huge game on the slate for the weekend, the big one at home, Saturday night in Death Valley. 8 o'clock kickoff, the Florida Gators roll into town. LSU, about a 2-touchdown favorite in that one. And I'm really looking forward to that matchup as well. It'll be interesting to see if Florida can match LSU's like their talent, and how does Dan Mullen try and kind of manipulate the matchup to try and win another big game in the SEC.
It's crazy. It feels like Florida has 9 lives, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, every time I pick against Florida, they just come out and show me, hey, you don't know what you're talking about, because they just always are in it, man. Dan Mullen is a quarterback whisperer. And is Kyle Trask, is he on par to play tomorrow with that knee injury he suffered?
I believe so. I think he's
it was just like a sprain. It looked a lot worse on TV than what – I mean, I thought he was done.
Me too.
So, Emory Jones, I want to see how he is utilized tomorrow as well. You know, throw – because LSU has always been notoriously known for a great defense. They're not great this year. They're okay. But this offense is really, really taking them off. So it's going to be different.
I expect this to actually be a closer game than the experts are predicting. And, I mean, right now the spread's still at 13.5 points for that game. Usually whenever you're just probably looking at these two teams, you probably shouldn't feel great about Kyle Trask. But I do believe that Dan Mullen will help mask some areas where Trask would be a liability for you, and their defense is still continuing to play. I think, I heard a stat this morning that so far this season, LSU's averaging like 55 points a game, while Florida's defense has only given up 57 for the entire season.
Wow.
So when you're putting that into perspective, I do think it'll be a game where the defenses show up more than the offenses, even though we have seen Joe Burrow and LSU's offense kind of thriving so far this season. The closest game for LSU was the Texas game, I believe, and that was 45-38. So I expect Dan Mullen to kind of put a few wrinkles out there to kind of help keep this close and ultimately have Florida cover.
It's, I don't know. I feel like if the game is close, there'll be a huge advantage for Mullen and his staff. I think Todd Grantham hasn't gotten enough credit either running that Florida defense. I watched the Florida behind the scenes, you know, HBO thing. They're going to do that at Florida. I think it's Penn State this week. Arizona State might be the third one, and Washington State, they're doing it there too. So yeah, that'll be nice to see behind the scenes with Mike Leach.
This is one of those games I kind of view in the way I view Tennessee, South Carolina, where it doesn't really matter who the better team is. It always seems to be close.
Mm-hmm.
And because in the last seven games, LSU's leading the series 4-3. But of those last seven, they've all, outside of one, come down to a one-possession game. Wow. And that one that wasn't a one-possession game was 17-6. So given how the teams look through earlier in the season, it's still one of those I expect it to be fairly close. It's just the way that rivalry has kind of gone as of late.
Yeah, and I guess the big question is, if I try to look for a reason to argue against that premise, which I don't really have a dog in the fight. I don't really have a good feel either way. But let's say I'm just trying to find some reason why I don't think that's going to be true. It's, well, LSU's a different team with this offense, you know? Yeah. Like, is that the reason that this time LSU might win by double digits? I think that's the big question mark for the betting line. It's the question mark for the game. It's the question mark for LSU as they try and challenge Alabama in the SEC West. We talked about yesterday, Alabama's defense had some injuries, not as good this year. If LSU's offense can score against Alabama, it really changes that whole matchup.
But can they hold on defense? That's the ultimate question. I mean,
yeah.
This is the best chance that LSU is going to have to beat Alabama, in quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Joe Burrow, he's slinging it everywhere, man. Would he get an invitation to New York right now?
Yeah, right now.
I think so.
Right now?
He'd probably have Burrow, Tua, Jalen Hurts. I think Jonathan Taylor would be the fifth.
Justin Fields.
And I would probably throw in Justin Fields as the fourth quarterback.
Okay. So you're going four QBs and then Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I had to give it right now.
I'm not sure who would be left out.
Trevor Lawrence, he's not done enough to be in that conversation.
Yeah, he's had a bad year for,
he's already thrown
for Heisman level expectations. He's had a bad year.
This year than he did all of last year.
Hmm. Yeah. It's going to be a wild weekend in college football. We'll bounce around a little bit more talking college ball on the flip side. Stick with us right here. It's a Football Friday edition of 3 and Out. Welcome back into the Truly Hard Seltzer studios of Fan Run Radio. You just heard the commercial for Wave Tech Medical. If you're struggling with ED, if the condition's getting progressively worse, let WaveTech Medical use its acoustical wave therapy to reverse this annoying condition. WaveTech uses its FDA-cleared machine and can improve blood flow, rejuvenate nerve fibers, and cause the migration of stem cells to the area of concern. Give them a call, 865-761-4401. That's 865-761-4401. Or go to WaveTechMedical.com for a free consultation. Catch the wave today and experience a renewed lifestyle. It's 865-761-4401. Davey says third down coming in with that Welcome to the Jungle. It's, I kind of like that song. They've kind of ruined it.
Oh, it completely ruined it. Completely.
It's third down. Between that, shooting off fireworks when you score a touchdown with 1 second left against Georgia State, like the, yeah, it's
terrible.
It's bad. Tennessee put out the tweet about how the Georgia-Tennessee game was the most watched game, yada, yada, in that time slot, up 56% from last season, something. I was like, what are you doing? Most people agreed with me. I did get the one Vol for Lifer who's like, yeah, crap on our team for having great fans or something. It was like, I mean, Georgia fans were watching that game too. They're really excited about their team. They're in the hunt for a national championship.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure I'm celebrating the fact that a lot of people watch Tennessee, you know, be embarrassed on national TV. I know we're right in the middle of it. We saw some things we liked from Brian Maurer in the offense in the first half. Mm-hmm. But to a lot of casual fans, it's just like, whoa, I thought Tennessee was a good football program. You know, I mean, it just wasn't good.
I mean, it's a recruiting point, you know.
I did see that.
That's all that is. Which,
but I don't know.
I'm with you.
Come here so the nation can watch you get your ass kicked. A little too harsh.
No, Davey, you hit it on the head.
No, it's true. Like, I don't understand why you would want to promote that a lot of people watch you lose pretty badly.
I mean, same way, like, you know, Notre Dame's like, you know, you're seeing your grandma can see you in Atlanta because we're on NBC.
Yeah.
You know, that's literally what that tweet was.
Yeah. And it's good when you're good, and it's really bad when you're bad.
Yeah.
It's
I wouldn't have.
It's a double-edged sword, I guess. I didn't. Can we just understand where I was watching that Saturdays in the South thing. It was like not the last one, but one before. It was Bo Jackson and Auburn. They're talking about the Alabama game, and one of them, somebody being interviewed. I can't remember which one it was. Like Alabama was beating Auburn pretty bad when Pat Dye went there, and then Auburn started. He finally was able to start beating Bear Bryant near the end of his career. And one of the guys was like, I think it was like this freshman offensive lineman for Auburn. He was a guy that Bo Jackson did the bow over the top play, like right behind. But he was like, yeah, they had just been whooping our ass, and the score, they were like down 10 or something, you know? And it's like, man, we've really redefined getting our ass whooped, you know? Like, it's just, you know, losing by 17 used to be like bad.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh, it's 34-3, no big deal. 41-0, no big deal. Yeah. Oh, we scored two touchdowns, and we scored 14 points against Georgia. Like, we need a reset of Tennessee football. I mean, we need something like Auburn or Kentucky that happened last year to happen tomorrow. Need it bad.
Yeah, and, I mean, you need that. Mississippi State's not even on the same playing field as those two teams were last year. Kentucky beat Mississippi State, what was it, like 28-7 last year?
Wow. I didn't remember that. Is that their permanent crossover team?
Yeah.
Ole Miss and Vandy. And I believe Kentucky it was Mississippi State
won this year 28-13.
I think that's right. One of those touchdowns for Mississippi State was a pick six.
Yep,
28-13.
Man.
Nice.
I mean, like, this is make it or break it time tomorrow. I mean, obviously, I do think if you play better and you lose a close game tomorrow and you go to Alabama and you don't get your whole team hurt and then you're able to, you know, win out, I guess. What is that? That's Missouri, South Carolina, Kentucky, UAB. That's you end up, what, 5-7?
Yeah, South Carolina. I don't know if you said them.
South Carolina, Kentucky, Missouri. Vanderbilt. No, that'd be 6-6, right? If you won out, you'd win your last five.
You're saying if we lose tomorrow?
We lose tomorrow, we lose to Alabama.
Yeah, then you could still finish 6-6.
6-6.
Yeah, because, yeah, if you're going into South Carolina and you lose both these games, you're 1-6.
Okay. So, I mean, I guess theoretically, you could lose tomorrow, but play a lot better. Let's say you lose by a field goal, real close game. You don't get your team completely injured at Alabama, and you win the rest of your games. That would be really salvaging the season. That would be okay. So it's not necessarily like a must win. But I feel like if you lose tomorrow and you don't play really well, then there's probably no chance. I mean, there's probably a below 3% chance you win all the rest of your games anyway.
Yeah, I mean,
especially going on the road to Missouri.
I feel you have to keep this close. If it's
an
more than double digits against this team, like this Mississippi State team's not, they're really not good either. I think at the end of the year, I mean, there will be questions about Joe Moorhead. Like, I don't expect him to get fired by any means, but it's like, can he get it done in year three? And he probably will be coming in on a little bit of a hot seat for his third season in Starkville. So if you can't even put up much of a fight against this team, and then you go and you get destroyed by Alabama next weekend, and you're 1-6, and then, of course, the talk's going to be like, Tennessee just can't beat Will Muschamp.
Mm-hmm.
When you play South Carolina, fortunately you have them at least coming in here.
Yeah.
But again, like, that's a game where I mentioned earlier about the Florida LSU, where it just continues to be a close game. It doesn't really matter which team's a lot better. You'll probably have a close one, and honestly, you might even have what you had in 2017, where it kind of came down to the last play. And
will they print up keep Jeremy Pruitt shirts this time? If you're 1-6,
they might, man, like that. See, and that's the ultimate disrespect when you got the opposing team wanting you to keep their coach.
I don't think they will this time because they're so bad. They're mad at their coach.
So, yeah, honestly, like, South Carolina fans might be wanting Tennessee to win. You've had it. Like,
have you ever had a game where each fan base wants their own team to lose more?
Yeah, because I mean, that's where I honestly, like, I don't remember if I said it or not, but whenever I was in the stadium for that South Carolina game a couple of years ago, and I was just like, man, I actually don't want to win this because I think if we do, that means we're keeping Butch. And at that mm-hmm. point, like, I just knew I was out on Coach Jones. Like, I was like, this guy's not going to get you anywhere of relevance on a national stage again. Everything's just falling apart. And so if you're 1-6, and then, of course, South Carolina, they could be – there's a good chance they're probably 1-6 coming in here too.
Oh, they'd be. I think they've won two games.
Oh, they have? Okay.
Yeah. They beat Kentucky.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. So.
They're 2-3, I think. But yeah, it could be bad. I mean, they play Georgia this week, Florida next week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Georgia. At Georgia and then Florida. And
yeah.
Then at Tennessee.
So it's a rough stretch for the Gamecocks also. I mean, it's not the be all end all tomorrow, but it goes a long way. If you win tomorrow. And then you're looking at it going, okay, win tomorrow. That Vanderbilt game's looking like a good chance to win.
Yeah. I mean, if we get to the point to where we haven't won another game going into UAB, I kind of hope, like, we just lose out at that point.
Okay. We're not there yet. Just wait till voluntary action tomorrow.
I'm saying if.
Yeah, okay.
Going back to South Carolina, man, I think they have two winnable games left on the schedule. Well, I mean, obviously three, but I think they'll win two, maybe. Tennessee, I mean, because, guys, I've talked myself into beating Will Muschamp, and it hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, I mean, guy that just redshirted, Brandon Johnson. It was a catchable pass, you know? Could have easily won.
Yeah.
But that one was on Palmer.
Was that Palmer?
Johnson was the one that kind of helped you get down there.
Yes,
he had that really
yes.
long pass.
Oh, okay.
It's exactly.
But
right.
It was just right out of the reach of Josh Palmer.
That
I think it even
Palmer.
Hit his fingertips.
Yeah. And then, so I'm thinking at Tennessee can maybe be a victory. And Vanderbilt. They do play App State, though. But App State.
That's no pushover, yeah.
They are red hot right now.
App State's trying to catch and pass Boise to, you know, make the New Year's Six
yeah.
bowl. Because I believe App State's schedule, I don't know if their technical strength of schedule would be better, but if App State can beat South Carolina and go undefeated, they would have a win over South Carolina and a win over North Carolina, which would be pretty impressive.
Yeah, that speaks volumes to what Scott Satterfield was able to do with that program. The fact they're still rolling like they are.
Yeah, it's Drinkwitz now. Rolling with App State. They got that big win on Wednesday night in Louisiana.
Drinkwitz was NC State, correct?
Yeah.
They won last night against Syracuse. It was a boring game. I think it was like 16-10.
Yeah, that was I'm glad I missed that one. I was watching a little baseball. The Astros got the win.
Guy who's got 4 million riding still got a chance.
Yep. So got the favorite. Yankees, Astros. It's just favorite and favorite on the American League side. And then the two underdogs going at it on the National League side. Nationals will be at the Cardinals. I think that starts tonight. So there you go. There's your baseball talk edition of Three and Out on this Football Friday. We'll come back, talk more football. Stick with us right here on Three and Out. Welcome back to Three and Outs. Nate Hodges with Malcolm Harrison for Houston Crest. We got Davey Hudson as well. George Vall wants Sabotage by Beastie Boys for the third down song. Davey said he doesn't hate it. Malcolm is third down for what? For life?
For life, man. Glory days. Let's get it. 9-4, you, baby.
I think they should just bring it back just out of the blue. Just pick a moment. Pick a big moment and just go for it. Like in a close tie game. I don't know. Maybe halfway. Maybe second quarter tomorrow. It's 7-7. Students are in. And the place is still, you know, starting to get hyped up.
That would be perfect.
Third and nine, backed up at the 15. And just drop it.
I feel like they've had a lot more bad gimmicks than they have had good gimmicks over the years.
How many good gimmicks have there been in Tennessee football in your lifetime?
Third down for what?
Was that a gimmick or was that, I mean, to me.
I classify that as a gimmick. Okay. I mean, I would throw in the trash can because that was just incredible.
Black jerseys with Lane Kiffin.
I was there that night.
Number one for me.
That's up there.
Because that was a surprise. Like the ones you're talking about are. The basketball team has some, I wouldn't call those gimmicks, but they have some stuff that, like the one fly we all fly is awesome. The cell phone app things, that's, a lot of people are going to just do that. There's nothing you can do about getting that knocked off, but that's fine. That's good. But for football, I don't
remember it, but Houston always talks about Smokies on the Prowl.
That was the second worst all time. Have you ever heard of
no.
this?
No. What is that?
They used to have a thing. I don't know when they played it. That's what I can't remember.
He doesn't either. I guess it would have had to either be.
Well, it wasn't third. Was it third? It wasn't third down there, right? I think it was after Tennessee would punt, maybe. And so I can't remember if it was a defensive thing or no. Maybe it was when Tennessee had received a punt. And during the break, like before the offense came back out, but like at kind of the end of the commercial break, they would have this, I think it was a recording. I'm not sure who said it, but an announcer. It wasn't the PA guy.
Yeah.
Would have been worse if it was him. It was a recording of a guy going, Smokey is on the prowl. And then you had this, oh
my.
Yeah.
That is bad.
It was bad.
That is bad. Yeah, that's
I don't even remember
one.
When that was. We did like a YouTube search one day trying to find it and couldn't come. I don't think we could find it.
Yeah.
Like no one's going to record that and be like, post this to YouTube. You know what I'm saying? It's not like between third and fourth down.
Rocky. Top. Is that awful. How that went?
No, it was. Okay, so that was the worst thing ever attempted. That was worse than Smokey is on the Prowl. So Butch Jones had this thing he wanted to try. And he tried to teach everybody it during the open practice 2016, mm-hmm. I guess. So people were excited for the season. They were still kind of this up-tempo team, and you had a lot of good players on offense. He said, when we get a first down, he's on the microphone, when we get a first down, he said, this side of the stadium's going to say Rocky, and this side of the stadium's going to say Top, and then everybody's going to clap, clap, clap. So it was supposed to be like, Rocky, Top. Well, if you've ever been to a game at South Carolina, one of their main things that they do, and they even do this, try to do this kneeling, obviously not as effective, but half the stadium would go, Game. The other half the stadium would say, Cox. It's, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of goofy because one half the stadium's having to just yell Cox over and over. So there's a lot of jokes there, but... Because a side of the, you know, Tennessee does orange and white sometimes during a break. Like, back when Tennessee was good, the cheerleaders could actually get the crowd to do that yeah. sort of thing. But if you've ever been in a stadium that's doing a call and answer, like, it takes time to kind of get the one sound from one stadium side of the stadium to the other and then back. And it's cool when that happens, like orange and white during a commercial break. There's nothing else to do, and you're winning and whatever. It's like just that you can kind of hear it. And, you know, the VOLS, they do that type of thing. Well, the problem with trying to do that after you get a first down as an up-tempo team is that it would take a minute for the Rocky to get all the way across the stadium. Then it took a minute for the top to get all the way back. Then you start – by the time everybody started clapping, the guys in the practice were trying to call the protection and get the – and so you were distracting your own offense. The genius of Butch Jones. Davey, who's on the phone?
We got Seth.
Seth, I don't know how you follow that, buddy. We've just cleaned the deck. You can take this call wherever you want to go. How are you? You're on a Football Friday edition of Three and Out.
Well, yeah, I don't know where to take that. I don't even remember like a lot of that stuff. I went to the Arkansas game back in 2015 when we lost, and I don't remember a lot of that stuff like going on whenever I was there. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention.
Well, yeah, Butch tried that thing in the 2016 fall practice, and it didn't even take. Like, it was so bad during the practice they just scuttled it. Thank God, because it was awful. Yeah. But 2015, they were playing third down for what then, right? The Arkansas game?
I want to say
yeah, that's right, yeah. And that was really good. Because everyone was pretty hyped up. That game started with Evan Berry returning a kickoff, like, 100 yards to the house. So that was pretty awesome. So everybody was pretty hyped up, and third down for what was still rolling pretty good at that time.
I'm not sure what's worse, the current Welcome to the Jungle with Jeff Jarnigan's annoying voice, or the when they tried to like do the, was it last year? It was kind of like the techno slash rap slash weird, like it was like a synthesizer. It was like something I'd play on my keyboard back in the 80s, you know, like, you know what I'm talking about? It was like a third down, like it was third down, and it was just like, I don't know, it's just this weird sound effect.
I'm trying to think back.
I don't know. But anyway, yeah, that Arkansas game sucked. It looked like Tennessee was off and running again, and then Dan Enos just seemed to pick on our linebackers to death. And that's really what's been happening this year. Our linebackers can't cover.
Well, that's kind of what I was wanting to ask about. With Kovaris Crouch working an inside linebacker, has he been running the buck position since Daniel Petulli hasn't, or have we even been running that package?
I think they started the year with DeAndre Johnson lining up there even on third down, and then when he was kind of unspectacular, I believe they'd just been rotating other guys. Now, when they would go, I know there was one game, I'm trying to think, the game that I guess it was Georgia State. When you see the coaches, if you're in the stadium, you can't see it on TV, but when you're in the stadium and they get third down and they'll do like a big X symbol with their arms, I believe that's their rabbit package, because you'll see like the rush linebacker come in the game. The DB, sometimes a safety will go out and a corner might come in. But Crouch in that game was running a special package. Those were the only plays he was in on. And of course we didn't get Georgia State in third and long much, but there was one possession where they stuffed the run on first and second down. They go to that rabbit package in third down. And I believe that's when Schamberger got a sack on the Georgia State quarterback. And I mean, that's, you know, he was coming on a blitz. That's the way it should work. So I don't know. One of the problems is it's hard to figure out. Like, I know I've studied Will Muschamp's defense. His jack player is really easy to identify because it's the same guy whether they're in base or in nickel or in like their NASCAR rabbit, whatever they call it. But it's harder to tell with Pruitt who's playing those positions when, because the buck player, the jack player can go to buck in when they go small, and their money guy can play jack in the base. So it's harder to tell. It's easier the way Pruitt does it makes sense. It's right after Belichick and Saban. It's the way they do it. It makes it easier on the players because they know that if I'm at this spot in this package, like, it doesn't change. I just do this if we go to nickel or whatever. But it's harder watching the game to just know who's playing what role.
Yeah, I was kind of just thinking about, like, I didn't know if Kovaris Crouch was going to try to slide over. I didn't know if they were ever going to try to work him at buck, because I feel like he might be actually a pretty good player to run at the buck spot, just because he's got a little bit of mobility. Kind of, I mean, I don't, I mean, he's a little bit, I think his arms are a little bit shorter, I remember. So I don't know how that would affect him. But I was kind of just wondering what type of defense we would run. I'm hoping we can kind of see, because you guys were talking about it yesterday about how we run cover two a lot, like we run two deep. And I'm kind of like with the run game Mississippi State has, I feel like you can sell out. Like I honestly think our defense is good enough. I think Georgia like made us worry a little bit, but you know, like with the quarterback pressure and stuff. But he's only been sacked one time in the whole year, and I think that offensive line is just elite. And even with, no matter what we did, I don't think we would have gotten pressure on him. But I'm kind of wondering if you could sell out on the run this week, maybe go into like some like one man deep and just have your corners play straight up, and hopefully you can try to stop the run. And if they're daring to throw on it, maybe Bryce Thompson and I guess who's going to start the other side, Warren Burrell possibly. I wonder if those guys will have a good game and try to get good stops.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Seth. They've got to play some single high, like something. You can do, like, I don't know, they've played a lot of two high. I don't know, you know, if teams are running the football, it's hard to tell if they're in quarters or if they're in cover two. I don't think they play a lot of traditional cover two because they don't have a Mike linebacker that can sprint down the middle of the field and take away the deep seam pass. I know a lot of college teams now are playing a lot of quarters coverage because it helps with these teams that spread the field a lot with width. I read a really good Smart Football post the other day about a lot of teams playing quarters coverage that way. So you can, I mean, if you want to play it safe, you can play single high and just but really be in a cover three look. And of course, Pruitt, his teams with this defense, they'll pattern match the receivers. So for an example, and I'm not sure if they specifically do it this way, but this is just a simple way to talk through it. Like Pete Carroll does this with the Seahawks. If they're in a cover three look, but I've got the boundary receiver, so there's not, you know, most of the other eligible guys are to the strength on the field side. If I've got the boundary receiver and I'm in cover three, technically I've got the deep third. But if my receiver goes more than 7 yards upfield on the stem, I'm keeping him no matter what he does. It changes to man-to-man if he goes past 7 yards on his stem. Now, if he immediately drags across the field, you know, like 5 yards or less, if he immediately goes, then I'm going to run with him for a second and then turn him loose to the linebacker who's in zone coverage, because then I'm going to be looking for who are they trying to wheel behind me? Who are they trying to either, is a running back trying to run the wheel? Is a tight end trying to run like a corner route over the top of that drag route coming across? But if I'm into the boundary and there's no other receiver, if there's no number two, and he goes 7 yards, I might as well just take him because there's not going to be enough time for somebody to get all the way back across the field underneath me. And if they do, that's somebody else could be running with that guy anyway with their pattern matching system. So that's more of the kind of the Pruitt style mirrors that. You can play single high and be in cover three and be pretty safe. Or, you know, obviously you can go man-free and have the one guy deep and be man-to-man across the board. I think we'll actually see a lot more of that. I hope so anyway.
Really?
The biggest thing is, are we going to be aggressive and take away the run game?
I do not want to see man tomorrow.
You don't?
No, I do not, man. My thing is, and I pick on him a lot on my show because he has not been playing up to expectations with the outlier of last weekend. And you know who I'm talking about. I'm talking about Nigel Warrior.
Mm-hmm.
If I hear who his daddy is one more time, I might just call it.
That's going to be your breaking point.
No, like seriously, how many times do y'all hear who this man's father is when he makes a tackle? Listen,
every time.
Listen to when he makes his first tackle. That's actually Dale Carter. You know, I don't want to hear that.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. We'll come back. Final segment, hour two. Stick with us right here on Three and Out. All phone calls are brought to you on the Nextdoor Home Group hotline. Check out their listings at nextdoorhomes.com. It's Eli Corum with Keller Williams, and you can contact them there right through their website, nextdoorhomes.com, for more information. Talking college football on the show, obviously a huge day tomorrow. Tonight you got a couple games in the top 25. Virginia travels to Miami on ESPN, and then Colorado, Mel Tucker, go on the road to number 13, Oregon. as he tries to get a signature win in year one. Remember, Mel Tucker was one of the finalists for Tennessee's head coaching job 2 years ago, and then he ultimately took the Colorado job this year. They're 3-2, 1-1 in the Pac-12 right now. Dave, you watching either one of those games?
I don't know.
Just going to take it easy, no football Friday? And
It just depends. I might go hang out with some friends I hadn't seen in a while, and if I'm with them, we're probably going to have the games on. But I don't know. It's kind of feeling like the new Breaking Bad movie came out today, so I'm
What's
definitely going to watch that, El Camino.
Yeah.
But loved that show, and so now we kind of know
You watch Breaking Bad, Malcolm?
I do not, man.
Malcolm doesn't watch TV or movies. I'm really,
it's weird, man.
Have you noticed this? 2 days on the show. Every time I ask him if he's seen something, nope.
That is true. Well, I think a lot of those questions came off air.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I watched Joker yesterday.
Oh, you went and saw it. Okay.
I want to see it tonight, man.
Tonight?
Yeah. Is it what it's supposed to be?
I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
That looks really good.
Yeah, I did think it's interesting. This isn't giving anything away, but obviously it's a very dark movie, and it's a kind of a different take than what you've seen before as far as the comic book type movies go.
It was not a comic book movie to me.
But not by any means.
It was just a really well done movie.
Yeah. But what I just thought was interesting was Todd Phillips was the writer and director for it. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because he has done movies like The Hangover and other comedies.
And Road Trip.
Yeah. So you go from those types of movies, which really Todd hasn't done much outside of the comedy realm. And I guess if you want to say you can view it as a comedy, I think one of the lines even in the trailer was just, I've been thinking my life's a tragedy when in fact it's a comedy. But it's definitely a dark movie, and it's an interesting take. I've heard a lot of people kind of compare it to Taxi Driver as far as the style to an extent.
Is that a Scorsese film? Maybe I don't know. They were talking about
I don't know if they're making that
impact.
Gosh. But I can look that up. I mean, they both got De Niro.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, it's a good movie.
It is Scorsese. Yeah.
Definitely checking that out.
I thought it was really good. I'm not a comic book movie guy at all. Like, I just typically, in fact, I'm not a huge action movie fan. Like, I'll watch them, they're entertaining, but to me it's like, I don't know, it's just different. It's like, it's a different category. It's almost like, I don't know, if I can make a sports analogy, like watching a really good SEC football game that ends like in the high 20s, that has some really good defenses and some really good offenses. To me, that's like a really classic drama, like has some real like meaning and some themes that really move you. And then like an action flick is more like watching, you know, like a Big 12 game where it was fun. It was, you know, 45-41. Yeah. Lots of stuff happened, but I don't really feel like I was moved by the performance. And those teams are not going to hold up when it comes to playoff time.
I mean, that analogy.
Is that good?
That.
All right.
That was fire. All right. Fuego.
Well, that's pretty good. Joker did not feel like... Joker felt like an LSU-Alabama game. But not that boring. It was good. It was very interesting. It was not like a Batman movie.
No.
And I think everybody knows that going in.
I mean, I was just thinking the Alabama LSU. I was just like,
nah,
the 9-6 one, the 21-0.
I literally was going through scores.
maybe that was. Yeah, I shouldn't have gone that. The first part, just forget the
last
part.
Cut the last part out of the podcast.
The action movie and the drama, that part was good. The other, the rest of it didn't hold up.
Guys, I fell asleep during Batman versus Superman.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't think I've seen that.
It wasn't very good.
Snooze fest.
The only time I've ever fallen was in the theater.
Yeah.
The only time I've ever fallen asleep in the theater, I was on a date, and it was during the Star Wars Episode 2 when they remade those.
Attack of the Clones.
So bad. Yeah. Attack of the Clones. On a date, fell asleep. Not like a date with like my wife after like, you know, 9, 10, 11 months or something. I mean, like, second date with a girl ever.
That movie came out in 2002.
That's how bad that thing was. Yeah. Man. Just out. And didn't even care. Like, I was like, this thing's just not worth it. We'll come back to sports. We'll hit the NFL. We got to get to the NBA in China. And, of course, we've got SEC Survivor and gambling picks. Lots to get to. Hour 3, final hour of the week for 3 and Out.